Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two here on Gwen and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello out in Reno, and Matthew Scraby on the ones and twos per use. Little Gwen and Chris action. Daily Gambit coming up here shortly. Jerry Jones looks like he had a change of heart after basically telling Mike McCarthy he should go talk.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want anybody here who. Jerry, he didn't actually say he didn't want to be here. I think your actions had signaled that maybe you didn't want him here. And then after, I think, some of the embarrassment maybe kicked in a little bit on how the public was reacting to this, he told the Bears, no, you can't talk to him. Sorry. He's going to stay here.
Well, and then if he doesn't get a contract, though, by next week, he could go anywhere.
That's true.
So
that's true.
It's still a fluid situation. I heard Pete Carroll's name mentioned for the Bears.
Bears, yeah.
Possibly.
Can we stop with these names now?
Why? What's wrong with Pete Carroll?
I'm at the point in my life where...
Does it bring up bad 49er memories for you?
No, gosh, no.
You sure?
No. It's just like, I'm tired of the people that have been there before and done that. And, you know, Pete Carroll probably deserves another job because he was unceremoniously fired from the Seahawks. But, like, the Rex Ryans of the world... Can we just stop with these guys? Like, the NFL is completely different. I don't think their style is going to work. Why are we looking at these guys?
Why do you think that?
I think the style's not going to work?
Yeah.
Because we're too sensitive in this society.
Pete Carroll?
Look what Gerard Mayo... No, Pete Carroll's different. I'm talking about Rex
that
Ryan.
That same cloth
Gerard Mayo called his team soft. I guess his players didn't like how he talked to them. So...
Yeah. You know, listen. Again, I said it yesterday... although I don't like the idea of a head coach just getting 1 year when the team was trashed the year before.
Me too.
I think that's bad. But I don't think the given, as I said, the candidates that are out there, I don't know that New England is in the wrong for wanting to explore some of these candidates. That being said, it's always stands out to me. No matter who it is, when a coach is fired and there's some question on, like, why is he being fired, you get these stories and this information that always, it's like clockwork,
Chris. It was the Brian Flores stuff.
It trickles out every time.
Yeah.
When there's like a firing that everybody agrees on, you don't see this stuff. It's just when the firings are a little bit off. All of a sudden, you got these little stories trickling out. You got different insiders that all of a sudden have these little tidbits about what was going on behind the scenes. You mean tell me in the world of information, none of this got out until after he was fired?
No, you're right about that.
It is quite suspicious to me that it goes down that way, almost in today's day and age, almost like every time.
I have another thing that bothers me about all the coaching changes that a lot of people don't talk about, and it doesn't seem like organizations address it, and that is the relatively awful job that NFL teams do in selecting head coaches in the first place. I mean, somebody somewhere thought Gerard Mayo was the next great thing. Somebody somewhere thought Antonio Pierce was the perfect fit. Somebody somewhere thought, you know, Doug Peterson was the right hire.
Definitely Doug Peterson.
Mike McCarthy. It goes on and on and on. Matt Eberflus. Somebody chose Matt Eberflus. He didn't walk into the Bears facility and say, "I'm the guy." They had to pick him.
Can I ask you a question though? Outside of the New England situation, how many of those organizations are well run? None of them.
Right.
And
so maybe we should look at that though a little bit and address that.
I think so.
As opposed to putting all of the heat on these coaches that come and go so quickly.
I just think, and listen, Eberflus, from everything we saw, didn't look like, you know, he had what it took in terms of leadership wise, how he was able to communicate with his team. But, you know, at the end of the day, these owners are the ones that are picking these guys. Now,
yeah, and we've said this before. If all NFL owners were as bad in their businesses,
they would have
the
money
running
to be
their
NFL
teams.
Owners.
That's right. They'd have never made the money in the first place. I mean, look at the Giants, for example. I mean, the Giant owner was sitting there when Shane. Shane,
you guys forget his name every single time.
It's not spelled Sheed,
no,
though.
No, it's spelled S-C-H-O-E-N.
Yeah, there was,
yeah, it's a weird spelling, so that's why. But anyway, the Giants GM basically sat there and told the owner that Saquon Barkley wasn't worth it, and the owner said, "You better be right."
Right.
And it turned out that he was completely wrong, and then the season ends, and the owner goes, "Oh, yeah, you're up for next year. We love you." This, I don't get that.
It doesn't make any sense. It's, you know, you bring up such a great point too, because we all watched that Hard Knocks clip. He was like, you know, I'm not going to feel good if he signs with like the Eagles, and I have to see this guy. And that's exactly what happens. Not only does he sign with the Eagles, he makes them like Super Bowl contenders again. On his way to what could have been a record-breaking season against them, but he chose to not choose violence. In that case,
yeah,
he chose to sit out, and I just just thinking about how crude these owners can be, it blows my mind that you get a statement like that from the owner on national TV. He said it in front of people, and there's not a piece of him that is like, "You mother, you know what? You're gone."
Not only you're not gone, but I mean, they couldn't wait for the season was over to tell him he's back.
Right. The season hadn't even ended completely yet before they told him he was back.
How could you look at the Giants situation and judge that your general manager is doing a good job?
Yeah, I mean, I also think, like, when it comes to coaches like Brian Daboll and GMs like Joe Shane, if you're going into the offseason with questions, is this what you guys just said? Because I was typing something.
I want to let you say it anyway.
If you come into the season with questions from last season, and you think there is a chance that you're going to fire them at some point, then they shouldn't be your head coach season.
We didn't say that.
Thankfully.
But, clearly that wasn't the case, because he's already got his job back. Both.
Why would you ever want the guy got you into this situation to get you out of this situation?
And to be fair, I'm not as mad as Ed Dable, honestly. He got that team to the playoffs, and even with Saquon, they weren't that great. But he got them there, and they looked pretty good. But eventually, you know, if everything doesn't go your way, as it hasn't since that playoff run, you start to look at what you really have. And then you start chipping away at different pieces. The dude, the running back that you didn't want to give the money to, ended up being good, and the guy you chose to give the money to, you released.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you let him walk.
You let him go, and you paid dead cap.
And considering that is the biggest piece of all franchises, he must have something on Mr. Marr.
I read something today. You know, I dig into the Dolphins stuff more than other teams, of course. And, I mean, I read somebody who kind of broke down the exit press conference with Mike McDaniels and Chris Greer, the general manager and the coach of the Dolphins, about the continued failures that these two guys have in the exact same categories every year. And it was interesting that they just gloss over every one of them. They don't address them. They don't even acknowledge that it's fair to ask the question in some cases. And, you know, obviously, you know, the owner of the Dolphins, Stephen Ross, who's like a Hollywood mogul, you know, just doesn't get it. I mean, if you keep a guy in there that can't build anything but a soft football team, don't expect him to build anything but a soft football team.
At least in Mr. Ross's, and we've gotten way off where we were supposed to be, which is the David Gammon, but at least in Mr. Ross's, he's just hiring the wrong guy, right? He's not, like, actually meddling in what's going on. Him or the owner for the Giants. They don't seem to be meddling in terms of getting in the way. They just aren't picking the right dude to pick the right dude, or they're just not picking the right dude themselves. So hopefully they learn from their mistake. They'll pick the dude who picks the better dude and picks the right coach in general. But it's just, to me, all these things have one common denominator. They don't seem to be run very well.
It took 50 years for the Lions to find their coach. I mean, look at Matt Patricia, Jim Schwartz. All of those guys went through before they finally found Dan Campbell.
I think ownership, although it stayed in the family, has kind of gone in a different direction over time, too.
Yes, they finally had some of the Fords passed away, leaving behind a couple of Fords who happen to know what they're doing. I hate to tell you.
So Smart skipped a generation in this case.
It's almost what happened with the Lions in a lot of ways. But here's the other bottom line, and this is for all walks of life, and I know everybody out there can identify with this in their own line of work. Some people just interview better than other people.
Absolutely.
And some people just are able to put their best foot forward better than others. And they sell themselves better than others. They look the part better than others, whatever the case may be. But we've all seen it in all walks of life, how people that we kind of know can't really do the job end up getting hired over and over and over again.
And
that's not just in sports, actually.
I'm glad you said that, because we are acting as though it is an exact science. Because you're going into these meetings, it's not like you got a crystal ball ahead of you and I'm like, okay, yeah. This is going to turn out exact. It's not an exact science picking a coach. There are certain steps you can make to ensure that at least, you know, the bones of the operation are right. But you really don't know when you go into these situations and have to pick. And so
I can tell you from firsthand experience that I am a terrible interviewer. I get very nervous. I stumble over my words. I start sounding scripted, like I've been thinking about this for 5 weeks now. Just like, and yes, I will do a good job for you if you give me this job. And I'm lucky that some people saw through the awkwardness of my interviews. But interviews are just nerve-wracking to begin with, I think. Some people love them. I hate them. Hate them.
Yeah. So should we do Daily Gambit? It's 3:12.
No, we should go to break.
Let's go to break.
Wait, hold on. Give me a second.
Sorry. He's not ready.
Got to get ready. Got to get ready.
We do have some bets for you gamblers out there. And so
we'll do it.
When we come back, we'll jump into some of that Daily Gambit. I'm Gwen and Chris.
Hey, welcome back to Gwen and Chris. 3:18 is the time. Crisello in Reno, Nevada. Moving on from here to Laramie, Wyoming. It only gets better for me, guys.
What's the temperature in Laramie right now? Let's check.
I don't know. I read it earlier before I left. It wasn't terrible.
Oh!
But
my goodness, Tony. Do you want to know what's going on tomorrow in Laramie? High of 22 degrees.
Oh, my Lord.
Low of 3 below.
Hold on.
And ooh, flurries. Did you bring warm enough clothes, Chris?
I'm cold talking about it.
I brought warm clothes, but I got my little San Diego State knit hat here.
It sounds like you're a little underdressed, man. I could just get the sense the way you're talking about it. You're going to need at least two more layers.
I'm underdressed at the moment, but I'm not going to go outside in Laramie like this.
Well, you have to get off the plane to get to the hotel, so it's going to be
cold. I really do have a huge jacket, so I think I'm going to be okay.
All right.
Thank you for your concern.
But it's going to be cold.
Scraby and Tony are back in the studio. I just wanted to throw one more thing to kind of put a bow on our discussion about what he's going to be good. I think the greatest example of all is the greatest coach in the history of football. Because Bill Belichick, as a head coach, in his first 5 years, was 36-44. had only made the playoffs once in those 5 years. And then he sat out for 5 years. And then Robert Kraft identified him as such a great coach that he was willing to trade away a draft choice and pay money to the Jets to get him. And it turned out to be the greatest thing Robert Kraft ever did.
Yep.
But how did he know that? There's no way anyone else could have.
That could have went completely left.
Exactly.
It's like Mike Singletary when he was hired by the 49ers.
I thought he was going to be the next great coach. I'm sure there was a ton of people that were thinking the same thing.
I think he lasted 2 years. 2 or 3 years.
I mean, in a lot of ways, right? Wasn't the Gruden deal, Dungy stuff? Wasn't that a connecting piece? Wasn't there some picks involved in
one
of those?
I think there were. I think that was a trade, John Gruden.
Yeah. It's just weird. You never really do know. All right, just like that, you don't know who's going to win and who's going to lose, but we're going to pick them anyway in today's Daily Gambit.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. We just have three bets to review from last night, and then we'll get our new bets for today. First one we did was Duke at home against Pitt. Tony chose Duke. I chose Pitt. Duke was a 14-point favorite, and Duke won by 29 points, 76-47. So Tony wins that one.
Cooper Flagg.
And your boy, Tony, Cooper Flagg, may have had the dunk of the year.
Man.
At least for college basketball.
Facial. Yeah, because Kobe White got something to say about the dunk of the year for the NBA. For
over
sure.
Wemby?
Yes.
Yeah, then
that
ten-
was a...
Okay. Tennessee, the number one team in the country, went to Florida to play the Gators. Gators are 8-point favorites, or 3-point favorites. They're the 8th ranked team in the country. And we talked about this yesterday, but Tennessee took a beating in this one. Florida wins 73-43. Tony and I chose Tennessee, so we're way wrong. And then finally, Utah and Iowa State. Iowa State, 16.5-point favorite. We both chose Iowa State. I'm doing the math in my head right now.
I can tell.
82 minus 59 is 13, so...
82 minus 59 is not 13.
23. Thank you.
Welcome.
Can't believe I did it on the air, so they win the bet. Tony and I win the bet.
Do you guys
do that? Like, I'm looking at this 82 minus 59, so I make it 80. 80 minus 59 is 21, plus 2 is 23.
Yeah, you got to look at the big numbers, the 8 and the 5. There's three numbers between them. So
you're confusing me.
I'm sorry.
I just can't do that.
I see it.
Oh, I see what
you're
doing
here. See what I'm talking
here?
About there?
All right.
So it can't be 13.
Did you know your 9 multiplication table? If you
Yeah, my son showed me this
okay,
the other day.
Okay, so 9 times 6, you put down your 6 finger, 54, mm-hmm. baby.
Boom. Boom. You showing the camera, too?
Yeah, 9 times 2, you put down your second finger, 18, baby. That's how I cheated in school. All right, Chris, go ahead.
Or you could just learn it.
Right.
You don't think I tried that, Chris? I am not a math person.
We're aware. We're aware. All right, here we go. For tonight, Aztecs 19.5 favored over the matchup zone of Air Force out of Viejas Arena. I know who Tony and I are picking. Scraby, what about you?
I'll go Aztecs too. Air Force is pretty
bad. Air Force has not been good this year. No. They're 3-11.
Word.
So
let's treat them like that.
Exactly. Gonzaga 31 over USD tonight. This is the game that ESPN's bottom line has Gonzaga as a greater than 99% chance to win. Which I don't think I've ever seen before. But
greater.
Yeah.
I don't think USD can keep this under 31.
I'm 31.
Sorry. Yeah.
You're going to go Gonzaga.
I'm going Gonzags.
All right. Scrape.
31 points is a lot. You know, I'll go with USD to come within 31 points.
That a boy, Scrape. Because I'm not going with USC. I've learned my lesson on them this year. I mean, they've had a really rough year. And Gonzaga, I don't know that Mark Few does this intentionally, but his team is so deep, they can't help but pour it on sometimes. All right, into the NBA, a couple of great games tonight. First of which, you've got Cleveland at home, 2.5 over Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City's won 15 in a row. Cleveland's won 10 in a row. I mean, this is a great game for, you know, the first couple of weeks of January. I'm going to take Oklahoma City to keep it going. I believe in the Thunder more than I believe in the Cavs. Tony?
I like the Thunder a lot. And Shea. But I'm taking the Cavs. I watched those dudes. Watch those dudes play the Lakers, and it was the Lakers were played well that day, but they could not get to score under 10 because these dudes were bombing threes. And I'm not talking about the threes that like hit any rim. There was not a piece of metal hit in like a quarter and a half. I saw it was
That's
all
annoying.
It was all twine hitting the bottom part of that little box. It's like ping.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it was annoying as hell.
Like the.
It's like, so it's the
yeah, and then I it, like that.
When the net comes up, it hits the metal part of that little
and it
box.
Dings it.
Yeah, I can't stand it.
You can't stand
I couldn't
it.
Stand it that day because it was them doing
it's happening to your team.
I'll go with the Cavs.
Cavaliers as well. All right, in that game, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Donovan Mitchell. Points. Who do you want here? SGA minus 10. Or Donovan Mitchell. I don't know if I explained that right.
No, I get it.
If you take Donovan Mitchell, you get to add 10 points to his score.
Yes.
So who's going to score more? Scrabe.
Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell plus 10.
Yep.
I'm going to go with SGA. And I know Donovan Mitchell is capable of one of those 40-50 pieces, but SGA is almost an automatic 30. So I'll take him.
Okay.
Tony?
Give me the guy who likes baseball. Donovan Mitchell.
Okay, I was going to ask.
Donovan Mitchell. All right, you guys are leaving me alone again. All right, we got Milwaukee and San Antonio tonight. So that is a matchup of freaks. So
oh,
who do
yeah,
you want?
There is.
You want the Greek
the
freak
Greek
minus
freak,
5.
Or the French Greek. Or the French,
or the French
freak.
The freak freak, Wimby. Yeah. You get Greek freak or freak. And Giannis is favored by 5 points. I will take the freak, Wimby.
Okay.
Plus the 5.
All right.
I think it's you, Tony.
Give me the Greek freak.
Greek freak, he says. How about you, freak? You should have good insight into this one.
I will take the French Greek. Or, I mean...
French freak.
A French freak. I'm sorry, Wimby. <freak. laughs>
All right, and I got this one in here just for you, Scraby, because I know how you love it. Women's basketball. UConn at home against Xavier. I mean, Xavier's a real school, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Nick Cronin UConn's used to coach there.
I know.
Yeah.
UConn's favored by 50.5.
Woo-wee.
And they're not that real of a school, apparently.
Evidently, they're not very good in women's basketball.
I don't know if Paige Beckers is playing, but it doesn't matter.
I'm all right, Tony, who do you like here? Do you want the 50? Or
Tony?
Tony, you want the 50?
Given the 50? Yeah. 50? If Paige is not is she playing? Do we know? We don't know.
I don't.
I'm
going to
go under.
Report.
I'm going to go under.
You're going to go.
I'm going to go. Sorry. I'm going to take Xavier.
All right. I'm going to take Xavier, too.
Really?
50 is a lot of points, Chris.
All right. But 51 is all I need. I'll take UConn.
All right.
All right. There's our predictions for the day.
All right. Let's skedaddle to break.
What's coming up next?
Keith Smith of SpaTrac.
NBA, baby.
These guys have been bugging me since like the beginning of December to get someone from the NBA.
Here we are. So here we are. Almost the middle of January.
I did my work. I did my job.
Took him a month to finally get us an NBA guest.
Should we start working on a baseball guest now for the start of the season?
No, I should have started working on that in November, okay? But that's next on 97.3 The Fan.
Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Chris Ello out in Reno. Matt Scraby right here next to me on the ones and twos. Keith Smith, Sports Track, will join us shortly. Talk a little NBA. Some things percolating a little bit in the National Basketball Association. Charles Barkley referred to him as a dead man walking, and I think that's considering the circumstances in which
J.J. Redick?
Yeah, considering the circumstances in which JJ's dealing with right now. Probably not the appropriate phrase, considering his family is directly affected. I believe his family had to be evacuated out of the Palisades, which, as we talked about earlier, is experiencing a crazy, crazy fire that is really destroying the whole city right now. So
it's devastated everything. Yeah. And by the way, Tony, they've already we told you the Kings hockey game has been canceled tonight, but they're already pretty much expecting in the NBA that whatever Laker games there are the next couple of days or a Clipper games, whatever, and I don't know both teams' schedule, but those are probably not going to be played either. So keep that in mind. If anybody down here had tickets to run up and see a Laker game, you're probably not going to see one this week.
Yeah, it might not be a bad idea for the Lakers, too. They could use as much practice time as possible. Quite frankly,
LeBron is
spoken like a true fan after his team just got whooped the other night.
They look good for about three and a half quarters, and then it went cattywampus after that.
The thing I love about Tony with the Lakers is it's the one time that we can get him emotional on one game.
Totally,
because every other game Tony's just like, it's just one game. Yeah. It's don't get too high, don't get too low. But when you get him with the Lakers, it's a roller coaster, baby.
It really is. It's a wild
it's all
thing
the way up
part.
And all the way down.
Everything inside of my soul tells me that Tony's not going to care about this one game, but he does care a lot about one game. Danny has a fair point. Charles did make those comments before the fire.
He did. I wasn't necessarily saying
you were
Charles
just trying
was
to tie it together.
I was just tying it together. Gotcha, no, you're absolutely right. He made those long before he knew there was a fire.
Do you think J.J. Redick is on the hot seat already?
I think every Laker coach, honestly, that takes over the helm is on the hot seat. It at least in my experience, ever since Phil Jackson left, it's pretty much been the same way, right? I think poor Rudy T, he didn't make it very long. I think Mike Brown, he came in shortly after. He got about a year and like a couple of games. The following year, he was gone.
Ty Lue, is he ever a Laker coach?
No, they wanted Ty Lue. Oh. They ended up settling for Frank Vogel, who eventually won him a title.
And then got fired.
So, I mean,
that wasn't good enough.
It wasn't. I mean, so, and then we go through the next guys, right? After him, because he took over after Luke Walton, who didn't really have any success. Granted, he didn't have a lot to play with.
Oh, I forgot about Luke
Walton. He didn't have LeBron James at that point, right?
Tony, your memory on this is incredible, though.
Yeah, no. Then we go from him. Frank came in. He got the job done. From Frank, we moved to was it Darvin or was there somebody in between Frank and Darvin?
No, Darvin. I'm looking at it now. That's the only reason I know. You did leave out a couple of guys in your after Phil Jackson world. Mike D'Antoni was in there for
season. Yeah, he did do a bad job, I about to say.
He was terrible. And then Byron Scott did it for 2 years, and he didn't have any success either. Won 21 games and 17 games, Byron
I think
Scott did.
Mike D had the second to last year Kobe. Byron Scott had Kobe's last year. And so there wasn't a lot of good roster for those guys. So I don't even really count them. But everybody after, Mike D'Antoni got the Dwight, if I'm not mistaken, he got the Dwight Howard-Kobe Bryant matchup. That ended up not going all that well. So got a lot to discuss. Keith Smith, Sports Track, joining us shortly. As in right now. Let's bring him on. We welcome Keith
After traffic.
After traffic, we'll bring on Keith Smith.
From the 855 Get Ross Traffic Center, protecting San Diego after accidents or injury, here's Kelly Danick.
Got a few things that might slow you down. Westbound King Freeway at the 15, an accident involving a couple vehicles. Trying to move that into the center to 5. Also, traveling on southbound 805 before the 54 accident clearing stage. Everything is over to the right shoulder. Eastbound 8, right around Mission Gorge Road, there is a collision involving a car and a motorcycle. That's over to the right shoulder. And on the south 125, right before Hamashaw, a collision involving a couple vehicles. That's over to the right shoulder. I'm Kelly Danick with Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Let's bring on our next guest. Keith Smith joins us via Spot Track. Talk a little NBA basketball. It's been a little bit. Keith, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. And, hey, trust me, I used to live in Southern California. You know everything comes after traffic.
that's exactly right. Well played. Let's talk a little NBA. There's a few stories kind of percolating as we get closer and closer to the deadline. I have to start with Jimmy Butler first. It seems like him and Pat Riley have... The relationship has run its course. He is angling to get to a contender. Having watched Pat operate for a long time, he's not necessarily going to go along with that plan. How do you see this kind of thing ending up when it's all said and done?
Yeah, generally NBA history tells us when a star-level player wants to get traded, they're going to get traded, and more often than not, they're going to get traded to where they want to be. The problem is, Jimmy Butler, by all reporting and everything matches everything I've heard, he really wants to be with the Phoenix Suns, and that means Bradley Beal would need to be traded by the Suns. He has a no-trade clause. That complicates that. Butler's contract is large. The Heat are dealing with their own salary cap issues as far as around the luxury tax and the aprons and potential hard cap. So this is not an easy one to put together, but you know, my guess is we'll probably see him get moved here within the next couple of weeks leading up to the deadline, and then we'll go from there.
Keith, you touched on it, but in the NBA, it's not always about making a trade for one player or another. It's more often a one contract for another. With a few weeks to go before the deadline, other than Butler, are there any big name superstars who could move that could change the balance of power?
Yeah, I think a couple other guys we're looking at are Brandon Ingram of the New Orleans Pelicans. There's been no movement towards an extension with him, so that sounds like they're very likely to try to trade Ingram, because they're just not going to want to see him walk away for nothing. I think he wants to get to a team that will extend him or at least re-sign him this summer. And then the Brooklyn Nets are still in the midst of rebuilding their team and resetting. They're going to trade Cam Johnson if they can find the right deal. He's a player that a lot of teams really like. As far as major superstars, probably not, you know, because it's, you know, Butler and Ingram are going to probably be the big names that move. But so many of these teams are working so tight around the tax aprons and these various hard caps and all the restrictions under the new CBA. It's probably going to limit true superstar movement to some extent.
Keith Smith joins us here via Spot Track. And Keith, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think oftentimes fans of this game kind of get confused with the salary cap and how things are working. And it's changed, as you mentioned, since the last collective bargaining agreement. And you kind of led me to this question. It's a little bit harder in this collective bargain agreement to collect stars. They've really made it tough on teams doing that. Can you explain in layman's terms why it's tougher now than maybe it was before the last collective bargaining agreement?
Yeah, without introducing a true hard cap like what exists in the NFL, the NBA wanted to make it very difficult for teams like the Warriors and the Clippers and what the Nets were becoming from being a thing. They did not want these teams that were, you know, running payrolls that were double and even approaching triple what other teams were. And it was very clear as they brought on different owners like Steve Ballmer, for example.
Yeah.
$100 million luxury tax bill was nothing to him because he finds that in his couch cushion.
Right,
they had to make it a real penalty. So what they did was they introduced all these things that make it very hard on these teams to build out their rosters, which makes it, you know, it used to be, hey, as long as you can meet the pretty liberal salary matching rules, you could acquire just about anybody. Now there's all these rules around, hey, this can hard cap you. If you do this, there are hard caps that can be introduced if you do certain transactions. And then as well as that is, it's harder to just trade draft picks and the like. So it's become a lot harder to build those things up. It's as you said, it's a lot more complicated, a lot harder to understand. Thankfully for a guy like me, it keeps me gainfully employed. But, you know, for the teams, it's a lot harder for them to do what they got to do.
Keith Smith is with us talking some NBA. And Keith, it seems like a kind of the elephant in the corner of the room, but the lack of NBA ratings right now, either the criticism / controversy over whether or not teams are just simply jacking up too many three-pointers to make it interesting for the fans to watch. LeBron James seemed to think so. Adam Silver acknowledged that it's something that needs to be looked at. Where could the NBA go, number one? And number two, what has happened in such a short amount of time to the eyeballs and the people that love this league?
Yeah, so I kind of make this one almost the equivalent to Major League Baseball. If we go back a few years ago, people were talking about baseball had become, it was all home runs, right? It was just play, you know, try to walk, get guys on base, and hit two, three run grand slams, whatever it is, home runs. You know, play long ball, and in the NBA, it's gone through their own statistical evolution where it's even more drastic, I think, in the NBA because you have this one shot that is worth half again as much as another shot if you can make it. So teams are very, very much, they've said, hey, we would rather take a bunch of three-pointers, even if we shoot a lower percentage on them, every one we make is worth more. And the only time we want baskets at the rim now is if it's a real open layup or an open dunk. And in some ways that's, you know, led to, I think parts of the game are even better. I think the ball movement and spacing is better than it's ever been. If you put on NBA TV and watch a game from the 90s, you're like, oh my gosh, how did anybody ever score? Like there's eight guys standing in and around the paint,
right.
You know, back then. But I think, you know, as far as the ratings go, the league counters with two things. One, hey, ratings are not, they just landed the richest TV contract they've ever landed. So they're not, you know, super concerned about that part of it. But two, they openly will say it's not all about who's watching on ESPN and ABC and TNT. The league is getting consumed in a lot of different ways. And they also openly talk about how they're one of the most popular worldwide sports. And that never gets talked about is, you know, what's happening overseas, you know, whether it be in Europe or Asia or even Australia, you know, who's watching there? You know, that doesn't factor in because, you know, we're focused on what are the ratings here. So the league feels like, you know, hey, all this concern, it's things they need to keep an eye on, but they're not overly, you know, worried about it because there's still a lot of eyeballs on the game right now.
It's such a great point, Keith, about the comparison to baseball because analytics has blown up in this league, and we talk about it often. But it's also probably blown up even more, and it probably had been taking place long before baseball really got involved in it, and you have seen teams, you know, sell out on the analytics in terms of the three being worth more than the two. But how do they bridge the gap? Because clearly, maybe it's not being consumed the same way, and it's being consumed differently, but there's definitely a change in how the game is played. And I don't know that it is great to watch as it once was. And you're right. I think the ball movement, that's a great point. There are some great things that have come about it, but I think there has to be a gap bridge there in terms of what the consumer is actually looking at.
Yeah, there certainly is. I think things that have been thrown out there. Well, one of the popular ideas is eliminate the corner three-pointer, which is, you know, generally one of the easier shots that teams hunt and try to get. My challenge is you eliminate that. Anytime any guy drifts about more than 5 feet out on the baseline, the defense is just going to ignore him because you want to shoot a 20-foot two-point shot, have at it. We don't care.
Right.
It doesn't really matter to us. There's been talk about what if we say teams can only take 43 pointers a game, you know, and do that. Well, my problem is you get to the, you hit that 40th three pointer, say with 8 minutes left, then the other side's just going to pack the paint.
Right. Cause they can't shoot anymore.
Now you can't shoot anymore from outside. So I don't think that, I think that's going to actually make things worse. With that. So I think what you'll see is you're going to see a transition where eventually I think we've hit a tipping point of the floor is so spaced out right now. Now you're starting to see things start to open up a little bit more inside. And what's going to happen is some teams going to come along and say, hey, if we actually build around these specific player types, we can get easier baskets in and around the rim. Because every coach you ever talk to will tell you, hey, if I can get a dunk and a layup every time, I'll never shoot a three-pointer again.
Right.
And somebody's going to come through a way of, all right, let's build this out where you put enough spacing on the floor, but we're really our goal is spread you out and work. The other option is, this one's not a popular one because it takes money out of the owners and players' pockets, is widen the court. That's something that a lot of coaches will tell you that probably should have happened several years ago, because now you've got, like, for example, the Celtics last night, they started Kristaps Porzingis, Jason Tatum, and Al Horford as their front court. Those three guys, if you put them side by side along, you know, the width of the court, they can cover the whole thing by themselves.
Wow.
Players are bigger, they're faster, they're longer than they've ever been. So one of the things is we need to create more real estate, and the only way you're going to create more real estate is by widening the court, but that means you're taking away rows of seats. That's going to cost everybody money. So that's probably not, you know, one of the first triggers that they'll pull.
Huh.
Yeah, Keith, that was a great recap, honestly, of where it stands. And I've heard all of those arguments before, but they've been talking about widening the court for a lot longer than just a couple of years. And owners have always said, no way will we ever give up those courtside seats. Got a couple seconds left. I want to ask you about the Lakers before we go. J.J. Redick is in. Did they really need to make this move? I look at the Lakers right now as opposed to the Lakers last year. They seem like the exact same team to me.
Yeah, you know, there's the trade they made in the last couple weeks. I think there was some pressure on, we haven't done anything roster-wise other than drafting a couple guys in the span of a couple years. Like, we needed to do something. I think that trade did help them. They didn't give up all that much to D'Angelo Russell. Had seen his role reduced, or Anthony Smith's going to help them. But this is the challenge of building around LeBron James at age 40. Is he still very good? Sure, absolutely he is. But there are real signs of slippage. We've seen he's not the same player he once was. Anthony Davis is an injury-prone guy. When you build around guys like that, you're always going to have some level of everything has to go perfectly for you to be the team you want to be, and it just hasn't gone that way for the Lakers. They're better, but so is the conference. It's a little hard. They're still not, you know, full-on title contenders.
Keith, before we let you go, I got to ask you about the Celtics. I know you covered that team a little bit. They're still really good. They still have a very talented team behind Cleveland right now. How would you grade them here in the early portion of the season?
Yeah, the Celtics are the stereotypical we won a title now team. It is. We've climbed the mountain. We know what it takes. We are not going to kill ourselves to win 60, you know, five regular season games again. We know we got to get healthy. We got to get back there. And quite frankly, this core group, even before winning the title, they've had so many deep playoff runs.
Yeah.
I think they're just a little bored with the regular season where it is, all right, you know, we just, this is what we got to get through. We got to win enough to be there. Now, Cleveland's raced out to this great start. At least that gives a little bit of a carrot that they can dangle of, hey, let's try to run them down a little bit and not just let them walk away with this. But the Celtics are fine. You know, I love that, you know, Boston sports fans love to say, what's wrong with them? Because they're the most spoiled fan base in the entire world. Because if you're not winning championships and in dominant fashion, it feels like everything's a, you know, problem. And that's, you know, that's kind of where they've turned now with the Celtics after, you know, the other teams have fallen off in the city.
Who you got tonight, Keith, before we let you go, between this big game of the Thunder and the Cavs?
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Cavs because they're at home. And But I can tell you guys, I haven't been this excited for a regular season game in a long time. I mean, yeah. We've got two truly great, like historically great with the way they're playing on both sides right now. This should be an absolutely awesome basketball game. And what a great thing for the NBA coming out of, you know, football season is wrapped up for a lot of the country. People are starting to tune in. This is a great, you know, chance for them to pop in on a night that's going to belong to, you know, really just to the NBA.
Yeah, that's another point. College football playoff is certainly taking some eyeballs off the NBA in the early portion of the season. Keith, as always, man, appreciate you coming on and catching up with us.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Keith Smith, Spot Track, talking some NBA. We got to get to break. 4 o'clock hour on the other side. Little Chris versus the fans. 833-288-0973 if you want to participate. More Gwen and Chris on the other side.